Okay, good morning, everyone. Nice to see you. All right, welcome to our weekly gathering. I don't know why every time I do this, it feels like the first time. But here we are. So let me look at what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to say hello to each other. So I'm going to turn this back over to Dawn and have her play our opening song while we greet one another on the board.
To the calling of the mystic awakening, in the flowering of the heart, everybody here melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love.
Thank you, Dawn. I am sitting in the living room, and the cat thinks if I'm in this chair, she ought to be in my lap. So we're going to try and work around her. Let's see. Let's look at our statement of purpose. We are an assembly of equals joined in common purpose, awakening to one true self. Within an appearance of many faiths, many cultures, and many symbols, we seek to discern one truth and to rest in its embrace. We say good morning, Grace.
Good morning.
The core value that I have chosen to read this morning, most reflective, I think, of the talk, is a core value number 5. We accept all forms as temporary appearances, permitted through enduring awareness of self. We live this value by honoring all appearances and all experiences while continually reflecting on changeless truth. All right. Let's look at our announcements. A new consistent gentle healing year one group will begin on January 27th and meet each Monday from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Mountain in the Awakening Together Sanctuary. The group will be facilitated by Reverend Shauna Summers. The Gentle Healing Curriculum guides committed students to make consistent, gentle progress toward genuine peace, joy, and love. Year one is based on A Course in Miracles workbook for students and other non-dual teachings. The group will meet weekly and will be committed to specific assignments and practices between group meetings. You do not need to register for the group. All you have to do is show up. Again, the first meeting of the new Consistent General Healing Year 1 group will be on January 27th at from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. If you're already in a general healing group and feel that you've benefited from your participation, you may want to consider inviting your friends or your family to participate by beginning with this new group. And it is a real opportunity, as any of you guys who are in the group are aware. So this is a, we only begin a new group once a year. So this is a real opportunity for friends and families to participate. Okay, announcement number two, registration is now open for our self-inquiry retreat at the Retreat House in La Vita, February 17th through 21st. This is has been a very popular retreat. It's certainly one that will help you go deeper in your self-inquiry practice. The retreat is based on the teachings of Indian sage Ramana Maharshi. At this retreat, you'll learn the subtleties of self-inquiry. You will participate in guided self-inquiry, meditative self-inquiry, self-inquiry with a partner, journaling based on self-inquiry, and you will contemplate and discuss quotes by Ramana Maharshi. The purpose of this retreat is to help you make advances in the process of self-inquiry in a very short time. So when you go home from the retreat, you'll be able to use self-inquiry more effectively to abide in the true self and detach from the false self. Each participant will also receive a book of Ramana Maharshi quotes about self-inquiry. The retreat is led by Regina Dawn Akers. For more information, please visit our website and look under Retreats and Classes, Retreats at the Retreat House. We also want to invite you to join us next Sunday, January 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Mountain for a special program where Reverend Shauna Summers will interview Laura Bedford. Shauna is interviewing Laura because Laura is an inspiration living as a peace pilgrim in a way the world might think of as crazy. Laura had her first mystical experience in childhood that helped raise questions in her mind. Since 1992, Laura has been involved with learning and practices for enlightening to our true divine Christ nature. In 2015, Laura walked coast to coast to raise awareness that inner peace is our true divine Christ nature. Please join us Sunday, January 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern to discover how Laura embodies truth. And we also want to invite you to join us on Sunday, January 26th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Mountain, in the Awakening Together Sanctuary for a discussion of our January movie, The Nines. And that program will be hosted by Reverend Jay McCormick. This film unfolds in three parts, featuring the same actors in different and in some ways overlapping incarnations. Together, the three stories form a single narrative that explores the relationships between author and character, actor and role, creator and creation. Alternately funny and unsettling, The Nines is like a riddle where the answer may just lead to another question. Ryan Reynolds stars with Melissa McCarthy, Hope Davis, and Elle Fanning. The movie is available on Amazon Prime, YouTube, iTunes, and Vudu. You can also watch the movie with commentary by John Mark Stroud on his website, onewhowakes.org. There's a play sheet available for the movie. It's on our website under To Read and then under AT News. And I tell you, what I'm going to do is share with you the trailer from that movie. So, let me do that. I got it. Thank you.
all of these characters inside of my head and they want to live.
So you play a lot of characters at once?
Oh, a couple. Most people do.
But you're not most people. You created the world. You know all the secret codes.
The God mode?
Is that what you call it?
Every time. There's something wrong with the world.
You feel like a man because I tell you that a secret. You're not.
What did he say?
He said Oblivio Acebit. It's Latin. Oblivion approaches.
What does that mean?
Well, other than the world is coming to an end?
You've been gone for 4,000 years. Not that timing's the same for us.
He's not coming back.
I don't speak that.
What happens if I cross this line?
I don't know, but it's not good.
Go back to wherever you came from.
I can get you out of here. Can you trust me?
Okay. That is, I love that movie. It's a fabulous movie. It's one of my all-time favorites. So even if you can't join us for the discussion on January 26th at 8 p.m., watch the movie. It's a fabulous movie. I assure you, you will not be disappointed. So, yeah. And Don was the one who recommended this movie. Good choice, Don. Thank you. Come on, Kitty, really. And let's see. All right. It's time for an opening song. So I have that on my computer. Let me find that.
Yes, I had a dream. stood beneath an orange sky. With my brother standing by. With my brother standing by. I said, brother, you know, it's a long road we've been walking on. Yes, it is, you know, brother, it is. Such a long road we've been walking on. Oh, brother, oh, brother. Dream, I stood beneath an orange sky. With my sister standing by. With my sister standing by. Salvation lies in your love. My salvation lies in your love. In your love. In your love. Oh, but you know I am so weary. Sometimes my mind is too strong to carry on. Too strong to carry on. But when I'm alone, when I've thrown off the weight of this crazy stone, when I've lost all care for the things I own, that's when I miss you. That's when I miss you, you who are my own. You are my home now. Here's what I know now, brother. Here's what I know now, sister, goes like this. My salvation lies in your love. 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 In your love. In your sister standing by. With my brother and my sister standing by now. With my brother and my sister standing by.
All right, now we'll have our prayer. Thank you, Father, for this continued opportunity to teach what I would learn. I am grateful for all the blessings that come into my life in whatever form they show up in. And I'm grateful for all of my brothers and sisters who are here with me. Amen. And I don't think that our reader is here this morning. Do you see her, Dawn, in the room? Is Jackie in the room? No. Okay. I asked Dawn at the last second if she could do the reading. Dawn, were you able to recover that reading from the email? Good. Okay, so Dawn's going to read to us from, it's an excerpt from a section of Jeff Foster's book, The Deepest Acceptance. It was relatively long, so I took the liberty of cutting various pieces out of it. But it's an excellent reading, and I'm excited to have Dawn read it to you. So I'll let go of the mic, Dawn. Thank you.
Thank you, Jacqueline. And thank you for asking me to read, because I love Jeff Foster. So here we go. It's titled Taking Another's Perspective. A man had been sitting quietly in the front row during one of my meetings. At the end of the day, as everyone was leaving to go home, he came up to me. He was red-faced, sweating profusely and quaking with rage. He had bulging eyes, unblinking eyes. He came up a few inches away from my face and told me, in no uncertain terms, that I was a fake, a phony, a fraud, a liar, and that I was dangerous, that I was misleading people, and that I needed to wake up immediately or else. He told me that I was responsible for all the evil in the world. Sorry, this is making me laugh. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. That I was a reincarnation of Hitler. It's hard to read this with a straight face. That I needed to take full responsibility for what I had done to the world. He told me that he was fully enlightened and had come to wake me up. And all I needed to do was submit to him. Now, you can imagine how easy it would have been to make him wrong, to tell him that he was crazy, to physically remove him from the room, to attack him back, to become a guru and try to prove my own strength and superiority, to demonstrate the advanced level of my spiritual evolution. In response to that kind of anger, that kind of threat, it would be tempting to reject him totally. He had rejected everything about me, my entire teaching, my entire existence. And more than that, he had come to save me from myself and wanted me to submit to him. But I was intent on engaging with him in a deeply human way. Had he really just come to attack me? Or was something else going on? Despite everything, I wanted to find the place where we could meet, as the vast ocean of consciousness in which all waves are already accepted There is always a place where I can meet another beyond the story. Even if that place seems far off, where could I meet this man? How could I see through his eyes? And his eyes seem to be seeing things in such a distorted way. What was he seeking? What did he really want? What was he truly longing for? I encouraged him to explain, clarify, and I gave honest responses that were not attacks on him, but gentle, firm statements about my own experience. I didn't presume to know anything about his experience. I could only report on my own. We can never truly know another's experience. As I stayed there, engaging with him, trying to find a place where we could truly meet, something strange happened. Because I wasn't rejecting him, withdrawing from him, or reacting to his anger. Because I did not fear him. Because I was simply being myself in the true sense of the word, recognizing the deepest acceptance within my own experience. He began to relax a little. He wasn't being met with attack, but with understanding. And his guard started to drop. As we talked, I realized that he had not come to attack me at all. He had come to try to make me agree with his opinions. He had come to be heard. I had this feeling that this man was a man whom nobody ever listened to. Although he made the most noise, it's often that way. His point, which he was making in the most roundabout way imaginable, was that the teachings of oneness could easily be an excuse for people to stop taking responsibility for their lives. The idea there are no individuals was false to him, because he saw a world where people were suffering, and he refused to allow anyone to deny that relative reality. He didn't want people to transcend the world. He wanted people to be a part of it, to engage fully with it, rather than escape into spirituality. And he had come to wake people up from their dream of transcendence. As I clarified my position, as I asked him questions about himself, as I listened to him and found the places where I actually agreed with him, or at least saw the truth in what he was saying, he relaxed. I knew I had nothing to defend. His whole body started to slump. Yes, I agree that non-duality can easily be used to deny relative reality. Yes, on one level, personal responsibility is very important. Yes, I am a human being like you. Yes, I agree. It's important not to mislead people. Yes, I can see how I would be a fraud if I believed in a false image of myself as a spiritual teacher who had all the answers. It was very strange. I found myself agreeing with him in some ways, with a man who only 10 minutes ago had called me the devil and rejected my entire message. I felt compassion for this man who had something very intelligent and even important to say, but simply did not know how to say it without resorting to threatening people and hiding behind an image of himself as an enlightened guru. I'm not telling this story to make myself out as a saint. I'm far from that. I wanted to show you how common ground can be found, even in the most frightening and confrontational encounters, and how it is possible to meet those who reject you, threaten your image of yourself on every level, because I recognize myself as the wide open space of awareness in which all images and feelings are allowed to come and to go, because I'm not holding up a specific image of myself as non-dual, as a non-duality guru or a teacher with all the answers. because I know that uncertainty, doubt, and even failure are deeply allowed into my experience. I did not feel the need to defend myself from his attack on non-duality teachers. And so because I was listening from beyond the image, I was free to hear what he was really saying. And more than that, I was free to find the truth in what he was saying. I didn't agree with everything he said, not at all. The point is, despite everything, we found a place to meet. He left not as an enemy. Our meeting ended in a clean way. Nothing was left unresolved. We found our inseparability. We found the place where we were not at war. I found him in myself. When you really listen to someone, you really listen to their perspective, their viewpoint, their expression of their experience of life, their story about what they have noticed in their world. You can always find some truth in what they're saying. However, challenging, confronting, strange, extreme, and absurd their views seem at first. Doesn't mean you agree with them. Doesn't mean you condone their behavior. It doesn't mean they become your best friend and the two of you go out for beers every weekend. It just means you find a nugget of truth in what they are saying. And that, in the moment, is the end of psychological conflict. I've never met anyone whom I couldn't meet on some level, however much I disagreed with what they were saying, however much they sought to destroy me, as in the story of me, in recognizing who I really am. I saw that there is no thought, no feeling, no emotion that is alien to me on the deepest level. Just as there is no wave that is alien to the ocean. That is why there's always a place to connect, even with people who seem totally out of reach. If you're a human being, I can meet you somewhere, even if it's a struggle at first to find the meeting place where we connect, the place where we know longer are at war, even if I have to access parts of myself that I'd rather cast out. This is what it really means to find common ground with someone. The ground that is common to us is the ground of awareness. We meet there and we share our perspectives. There in that place, there's no need to agree or disagree. There's only to listen and see and feel the truth and what the other person is saying, even if in the end you don't agree with them. I love what Voltaire said. I disapprove of what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. The end of war always lies in finding our common ground, the ground of awareness. And who knows? I may even learn something from the one I previously called an enemy. My enemy can be my greatest teacher, because in bringing up discomfort in me, he also brings me into contact with the image of myself that I'm still defending. In other words, he shows me which parts of my own experience I'm still at war with. He shows me the waves that I'm not allowing into my ocean. He reflects back at me the enemy within, so to speak, the parts of my own experience that I have made into an enemy by not seeing their inherent incompleteness. Oh, wait, let me say that again. It's inherent completeness. He is my greatest teacher, shining the light on my rejected waves. Although he probably doesn't realize this, my enemy wakes me up from my dream of image identification. Now, this deepest acceptance of another's experience doesn't mean you become a total pushover. From this place of deep acceptance, I can respond to your experience authentically and with passion. But it's no longer coming from a place of how dare you say this or say that or think that. It's no longer coming from a place where I'm withdrawing love, where I'm mentally punishing you for thinking or feeling the way you do, and where I'm making you wrong. It's no longer a reaction, an automatic defense of a threatened image of myself. It's a response in the true sense of the word. I am simply responding to this moment as it appears, to life as it is, rather than life as I thought or hoped or expected it to be. I'm responding to what is actually happening now from a deep place of, or from a place of deep acceptance, without seeking anything through that response. This is true responsibility. And then he puts in little brackets. Responsibility. So there's responsibility. The ability to respond from beyond the image. The end of conflict lies not in reactivity, but in this total responsibility, which emerges from the discovery of the deepest acceptance of this moment. Love your enemies, as Jesus taught. In other words, let your enemy wake you up from the dream that you have an enemy in the first place. Ask your enemy to show you what false image of yourself you are you're still defending. That's it. And that was Jeff Foster, pages 188 to 198, from The Deepest Acceptance.
Thank you, Don. I titled this talk, Wait, What Am I Defending? The wait part of this came from a discussion in, can you guys hear me, or is the cat line on the microphone? Okay, good. The wait part came from a discussion we had in General Healing a few weeks ago. Rhoda, one of our fellow class members, said that she had heard Tom Hanks in an interview say use WAIT as an acronym for Why Am I Talking? And that has stuck with me. And generally, I find that why I'm talking is to define myself. It's just so interesting to me that you know, my whole life, my whole reason for being, as I tell myself and probably tell others, is to shed the ego, is to shed this definition of myself. And yet I spend all my time telling you who I am, particularly when my image of who I am seems to need defending. So it behooves me when I find myself speaking, and most certainly when I find myself defending myself, to ask myself, wait, why am I talking? What am I saying? What am I defending? You know, isn't this thing that I'm defending, isn't that the very thing that I say that I want to be shed of, right? This false image of myself. I told you in the little blurb that Dawn posted for us, that I would talk about how pervasive this defense mechanism is, and it is. I mean, I thought, you know, this is a part of how we seem to relate to one another. For example, if you ask me, did you take the garbage out? I don't simply say no. I say no, I forgot. No, I'll get to it later. You know, our language, our way of communicating with one another doesn't seem to allow for me to just say no. It seems that my position needs defending. You know, no, I'm not thoughtless. No, I pay attention when you speak. No, you know, all of these things I'm trying to convey. No, I'm a good person. Not taking the garbage out makes you a good person. But I think the idea is transferable. You know, it always seems as if we're being challenged. That's the seemingly the default mode of relating to one another. And it only gets ramped up, for example, and I used this example the other night in a teaching. If I say, for example, did you drop food on the floor? You might or might not defend. You might go, oh yeah, I'm sorry, I'll pick it up, right? But if I say, why didn't you pick that food up that you dropped on the floor? You know, automatically my defense mechanism kicks in. Well, I didn't see it. Of course I would have, you know, I'm not a slob. I mean, you don't say I'm not a slob, right? But all of this self-image comes into this one simple encounter. So and there's a practice that I recommend, that Inner Wisdom recommends, actually. Inner Wisdom told me a few weeks ago that it was time to stop defending myself. And I have done this practice in the past where I simply don't, you know, when I see the impulse to defend myself, I just let that go. And if you engage in the practice, I think that you'll find, at least I found, that it's difficult to do. But what's really it's really helpful to do it, because you see how often you're coming from a place of defense. It just points that up so that you can see. And I mean, I don't mean, you know, once a day or twice a day. I mean, if you're, you know, if you're around people all the time, every conversation, you will find a place in that conversation where you're defending yourself. And again, wait a minute. What am I defending? Isn't it that thing that I'm trying to be shed of? Isn't that self-image? That who I want to be, that's what I'm defending. And why? I'm trying to be rid of that, right? That this false sense of self. I think that, give me a second. I think that we also find that defense is a way of manipulating others. We want to manipulate them into thinking we're a good person as opposed to a bad person. We're thoughtful as opposed to thoughtless. I mean, really, what's going on when we're defending ourselves? I invite you to do that practice, to just notice when am I defending myself? What's going on? Why can't I just say no when you ask me, did I take out the garbage? As I said, a few weeks ago, I heard very clearly that it was time to stop defending myself. Recently, when I went home for the holidays, I had an encounter with someone. And this person said, I was explaining some legal concepts, and this person said, I don't think we should talk about this. You're getting emotional. Well, I didn't think I was getting emotional. but when they said, hey, we can't talk about this because you're getting emotional, I'm like, don't you tell me I'm getting emotional. And I mentioned this, because I can see, first of all, I can see that, I had received the guidance to, not defend myself. I hadn't given it a lot of thought. I hadn't actively begun the practice again of going, okay, where am I defending myself? I could hear it a little bit, but I wasn't really getting the message. So it got brought home to me in a very, very strong way. And for that, I'm grateful. I was really given the opportunity to look at this in a very deep way. What images am I defending? Am I defending the image of the spiritual teacher who doesn't get emotional over silly little legal issues? Am I defending the image of myself as, I don't know, somebody who's fun to be with, a rational friend? As I was highlighting sections of this as this Taking Another's Perspective from Jeff Foster's book, I noticed Jeff Foster started out after he began telling the story about, he said, you know, it would have been easy to make him wrong, to try to prove my own strength and superiority, to demonstrate the advanced level of my spiritual evolution, right? To take this position that was opposed, and I relate this to my experience, I took a position that was opposed to whatever position was coming from that other person. You know, I took this warring position. And it was knee jerk. It seemed automatic. It seemed much deeper than that. Jeff Foster talks about his intention. He said, "I could have done all that, but I was intent on engaging with him in a deeply human way. I wanted to find the place where we could meet." I watched some YouTube interviews with Tom Hanks about his role in the Mr. Rogers movie, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. I haven't seen the movie yet. I'm really excited about seeing it. But Tom Hanks talks about getting to know, you know, the character he was playing, Mr. Rogers. And he said that, you know, the whole world seems to be coming from this us versus them mentality. But for Mr. Rogers, there was no them. And that's what Jeff Foster's talking about here. You know, it's not a me versus you. You know, that's one stance towards life, and that's what seems to be automatic, and that seems to be the way we live our lives. At least I have lived my life. It's subtle. It's so subtle. It's not like I go around consciously warring with people. But what I'm being called to do is to really do what Jeff Foster is talking about, is to be intent in really engaging with people, to be really intent on finding a place where I can meet with people. Not where are they wrong and where am I right? Not where are they challenging my integrity, my responsibility, my thoughtfulness? Where can I meet with this person? Where can I find truth in what they're saying? Byron Katie talks about this same issue, and she says when somebody says, you know, you're very unkind or you're very rude, she'll go, oh, tell me more. I didn't realize that. I need to know more about that. How am I being unkind? How am I being rude? Tell me more. Not, I'm not rude, right? Not at war. Where can I meet with you? Where can I see the truth of what you're trying to communicate to me? Like Jeff Foster said in his story, I wanted to find the place where we could meet. That's a very different intention than protecting the self-image, this image I have of myself, whether I'm protecting it for you or whether I'm protecting it for me, whether I'm trying to maintain this belief in who I am. You know, I don't know that's relevant. What's relevant is this shift in perspective about what's going on in my encounters with others. What is my intention? I want to be in a place where this is my intention. I want to find the place where we can meet. As Jeff says, there's always a place where I can meet another beyond the story. As Jeff talks about, he says, I was simply being myself in the true sense of the word, recognizing the deepest acceptance within my own experience. I'm not rejecting what you have to say about me, right? Well, that can't be me. She can't be talking about me. I'm not upset. This is what's going on now. This is what's being said to me now. Where can I meet with that? Where can I embrace that? Not reject what's being said. Not reject some image that I don't want to look at within myself. Where can I meet you? Where can I engage with you? Jeff says, as I listened to him, I found the places where I actually agreed with him. Can I do that? Can I do that in all my encounters? You know, a couple of sentences later, he's saying, yes, I agree with you that non-duality can be used to deny reality and all of these. He says, yes, I am a human being like you. There's always a place where I can meet with you. He says he tells the story so he can show how common ground can be found in even the most frightening and confrontational encounters. And that was pretty extreme. This guy was calling him Hitler, responsible for all the evils of the world. he says common ground can always be found. It is possible to meet those who reject you, or, and then he redefines that. He says, threaten your image of yourself. It is possible to meet those who reject you or threaten your image of yourself. Is this journey really about understanding that there's only one thing going on here, that there's only one of us here, right? Is this about my deepest acceptance of everything that I encounter? Or is this about defending my image of myself? He said one of the reasons he was able to do this is because he recognizes himself as a wide open space of awareness in which all images and feelings are allowed to come and go. And let me get the paper. Isn't that what we say in our core value? We accept all forms as temporary appearances permitted through enduring awareness of self. All forms. However I'm showing up, however you're showing up. Those are temporary appearances arising within awareness, arising within the shared awareness that we are. What am I defending against? Isn't it that recognition that I'm ultimately defending against? And he says, I recognize myself as the wide open space of awareness in which all images and feelings are allowed to come and go. He says, because I was listening from beyond the image, there's a practice. Because I was listening from beyond the image, I was free to hear what he was really saying. If I'm not defending, I can hear what you're saying. I can hear what's really being said, even if you're, you know, in my face screaming. What is he trying to say? What's she trying to say to me? What's being conveyed here? I mean, it's so interesting in this story that that Jeff told us. The guy comes in going, you're Hitler, you're evil. And what he was really saying was people need to take responsibility. There are people suffering. People don't need to use spirituality to deny their responsibility to their fellow beings. That's all this fellow was saying. And Jeff couldn't have heard that if he just went, this guy's a nut. Let's get rid of him. You know, I miss those opportunities to connect with you. I miss those opportunities to join with you, to join in our shared oneness. If I'm trying to figure out how you're wrong about who I am, if I'm defending this self-image. He says, because I was listening from beyond the image, I was free to hear what he was really saying. He says, we found our inseparability. We found the place where we were not at war. That's where I want to be. Always. I found him in myself. He says, when you really listen to someone, you can always find some truth in what they're saying. And again, that's what Byron Katie was saying. Oh, you're telling me I'm rude. Tell me more. I'm willing to look for that. There's something that has occasioned that. Let me look deeply at what's going on in here. Let me not automatically deny it. Let me look deeply. Is there truth here? Is there truth in that? He says it just means you find the nugget of truth in what they're saying. And in that moment is the end of psychological conflict. Let me look for the places where we can join not for the places where you're wrong about who I am. The place, as Jeff says, the place where we are no longer at war. Jeff says, the ground that is common to us is the ground of awareness. There in that place, there's no need to agree or disagree. There is only to listen and see and feel the truth in what the other person is saying. And we talk about loving what is, and we talk about loving what is in the circumstances in our life, but this is that on a very deep level. You know, and unless you're a shut-in, you have encounters with people all of the time. Let me learn to love what is in those encounters. Let me join with you in that space where everything is allowed. There's no need to agree or disagree. There is only to listen and see and to feel the truth in what the other person is saying. The end of war always lies in finding our common ground, the ground of awareness. Let me just be with you in that space. He also notes that your enemy can be your greatest teacher. My enemy can be my greatest teacher because in bringing up discomfort in me, he also brings me into contact with the image of myself that I'm still defending. What is it I'm believing about myself? Why would that need defending? We've always said if someone comes up and goes, "Oh, I hate your blue hair." There's nothing. I don't have blue hair. I'm not going to feel a need to defend, you know, against that because, I know I don't have blue hair, right? But if I feel an urge to defend, it must be, it must be that there's something in there that I'm still believing about myself. That's the only, yeah, you're a paperclip. I can't believe you're such a paperclip. Yeah, that's not going to bother me. I don't think I'm a paperclip. But if you say, "I can't believe you're so thoughtless," wait a minute. I'm believing this about myself if I feel defensive about it. So these are just opportunities to look and go, where am I being thoughtless? My enemy brings me into contact with the image of myself that I'm still defending. He shows me parts of my own experience I'm still at war with. My enemy wakes me up from my dream of image identification. So in my personal encounter over the holidays, I was explaining to someone this legal concept about doing a contract for deed on a property. And I was saying, "Oh, don't do that. Cause you know, in Kentucky, the law is this, that, and the other." And there's like, "You're getting upset." Well, I had lost my home in Kentucky after doing a contract for deed. So imagine there might have been a little bit of emotion there, you think? You know, "No, I'm fine with that. I am so spiritual that doesn't even bother me anymore." Right? I mean, there's at least something to look at. There's emotion there. Someone's hearing emotion there. Gosh, isn't that an invitation to just look and see where that emotion is coming from? Yeah, believe in loss, Don says. Yeah. And then Jeff says, now, you know, this doesn't mean you got to be a pushover. It just means that you come from an authentic place. Yeah, exactly, Don. And then the thought, I need to protect her from experiencing loss too. Exactly. Yeah. We're all victims, right? You know, it's so rich there that could have been explored, even if not in that moment. You know, I could put it in my pocket and go home, journal on it, right? But that's not what happened with the immediate defense. But again, this openness to explore what's being said, this willingness to join in finding the truth in what's being expressed, doesn't mean you're a pushover. It doesn't mean you gotta go, yeah, you're right, every time somebody says something, right? And you can even say, you know what, I really, really hear what you're saying, but that's not my experience. But it's not this knee-jerk thing. It's no longer, as he says, no longer coming from a place of, I can't believe you think that about me. I can't believe you think I'm emotional. All I'm doing is explaining an illegal concept to you. I'm no longer defending this image of myself. It's just a different perspective on what we're doing when we speak. He says it's no longer a reaction, an automatic defense of a threatened image of myself. What image was being threatened? What is still in there that I'm believing that I need to explore, that I need to sit down with inner wisdom and explore? What is still there? What images am I still clinging to about myself? What is it that I want to believe about myself? Instead, when you're looking for that place where we join, we're simply responding to this moment as it happens, to life as it is, rather than to life as I thought or hoped or expected it to be. I'm loving what is. I'm not needing this moment. I'm not needing you to be different. I'm not needing you to say something different. I'm not needing you to see me differently than you do. I'm just in this moment. Allowing it to be as it is. Allowing you to be as you are. Allowing me to be as I am. When we respond to others from beyond the story, from a place of deep acceptance, we're responding without seeking anything through that response. Well, what does that mean? I'm not trying to manipulate you. I'm not trying to feel better about myself. I'm not trying to project an image. I'm just taking that in to see the truth in it. And if it's, you have blue hair, great. Right? If it's, you're a paperclip, great. If there's nothing for me to respond, then I don't respond. I I am not a blue paper clip. Ha, blue haired paper clip. I mean, that's absurd, right? That just shows you that there's always something to look at. If there's any upset, there's always something to look at. Thank you for showing me that. Tell me more. Gosh, I was emotional. Tell me more. So again, I've taken all the time in the world. Look, it's 9:28 according to this clock. So I invite you to remember what Tom Hanks said. Wait, why am I talking? Ask yourself, what am I defending? Really, what am I defending? And then I invite you to resist the urge to defend so that you can see just how often we're doing that and to contemplate these issues. So I appreciate your time, your attention, your willingness to be here with me. And I am going to play a closing song. And so during the song, we invite you to donate to Awakening Together. Dawn has put that donation link on the board. And I'm afraid this song may go over into the fellowship. But I guess I'm going to play it anyway. It's a great song. So thank you, Dawn. All right, let's see.
What I see when I look into your eyes tells me who I am, that I might realize the truth about myself. When I look back at where I've been, the dream, it seems real. And desolation was all around. That was the only thing that I could feel. But I thought you were another on a path apart from mine. Then I raised my head and looked into your eyes, and the love that's all you are and all you've ever been just reaches out to me and takes me home.
Okay, Don, I cut that song short. It's a beautiful song. My brother, Daryl Price, and Shakur Cameron. But we're out of time, so thank you.